Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to episode 247 of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us, whether it's your first time or you've been here since the beginning, or you joined in the middle, or you joined a couple weeks ago. However you did it, however you're listening, we appreciate it. Jumping into it again, fight reviews this last Thursday, the 7th of September, from Indio, California and Southern California, from the Fantasy Springs Casino Resort and Casino, a Golden Boy Promotions card on DAZN for the NABF welterweight title of the world, would you call it? Or would you call those a region or
North
something
America.
Like that? North America. I mean, that's technically what the acronym stands for, right? Raul Curiel remains undefeated at 13-0 with 11 KOs as he gets the 10th round stoppage over Courtney Pennington, who takes the 7th loss of his career. We've talked about these shows in the past. Golden Boy, you know, has been doing, it seems like, a lot of their, their up-and-coming shows. Or what's the description I'm looking for?
Next generation or show?
Yeah, it's like a showbox of their version. They've been utilizing Fantasy Springs Casino in Indio, California for several years. But it's only maybe the last, couple years or so that they've really been showcasing their next generation of fighters at this location. So the Fantasy Springs Casino is really their spot for Golden Boy Promotions. And Curiel is a former Mexican Olympian, so he has some pedigree there. I think that he's still got a ways to go, but he's coming. I'm not sure how old he is. Do we know how old he is? I just don't know. He's got a ways to go in terms of getting a shot, a significant shot at welterweight still. Obviously, that's what everybody looks for, you know, but you have to build these fighters up throughout their careers, you know, level them up. And with Pennington, he seemed like he had it was a different level in progressing his career, but he was able to get the TKO stoppage in 10. And I think it was a 10 round fight. So this was the last round of that fight, but he was able to pull it off. But I think Curiel is coming into the welterweight division in this modern time, kind of at a perfect time, if you think about it, because all these fighters who have been at the top of the welterweight division are either aging out, they're moving up in weight. So if you think about it, and give me your take, do you think by the time Curiel, if he progresses as people will expect, how Golden Boy wants him to progress, do you think by the time he gets into the thick of the welterweight division, he's going to have a little bit easier time maybe scooping up an actual world title now that PBC's guys are kind of aging out of the weight class or just aging out of the sport? Or, you know, Crawford is kind of doing his thing and he's going to move up and he's pretty much at a different level. Spence is going to move up and all that. Do you think Curiel is coming in along with like somebody like Alexis Rocha, who's a lot closer, obviously? They're coming in at a perfect time where they're coming in as the next generation of the 147 division.
Yes and no, really, because he's going to have an easier time because hopefully the belts are going to fragment, you know, and they won't all be held by the PBC. But at the same time, it's still a super tough division, isn't it? You know, like you got Alexis Rocha, Virgil Ortiz, Jaron Ennis, and there's probably a whole host of other names that I'm forgetting right now that are coming through. But he's 27 years old, so he's still got time on his side. And he's doing the job, you know. If you look at him, what is he now? 13-0 with 11 KOs. Not much more you can ask for, right? You know, whoever he's putting in there, he's getting out of there most of the time. So yeah, I think he's looking good, and I'm sure Golden Boy, the way that they are, they'll match him, pardon me, pretty hard. And then he's obviously got Freddie Roach in his corner, so He's set up.
True. I forgot about that. Good point. Good point.
Yeah, he's set up for success, and when you see him, he lives, breathes boxing. Because I think before the fight, they did an interview with him, and they were asking him, like, you know, what does he, you know, how does he like LA? You know, how does he like the sights and stuff like that? And he's like, I've never seen him. He's like, all I do is go home, go to the gym, or go home, and that was about it. So
he's dedicated. Yeah,
you know, it's good to see someone, you know, with that type of, you know, dedication. So I think. Looking at him so far, I would say he's definitely going to be up and around the world title level. I think he looks the real deal.
Yeah, and we know, like you said, Golden Boy. I mean, a lot of these promoters do, especially Top Rank and Golden Boy. But us being based in Southern California here, we have a little bit easier access to observe the progression of these fighters under the Golden Boy stable. So we've seen firsthand on an ongoing basis. Just how tough the matchups are that they get put in as their careers move forward. So that's definitely going to happen as time keeps going. And in the co-main event, a super bantamweight matchup, Manuel Gucci Flores gets the 16th win of his career. He is now 16-1 with 12 KOs as he makes it an early night with the second round stoppage over Gerson Ortiz. On the broadcast, they were calling him, I think, Gerson, but I think it's in Spanish, at least it's Gerson, because J spelled, pronounced, excuse me, not spelled, it's pronounced like an H in a way. Ortiz takes the 8th loss of his career. He is now 17-8 and with 8 KOs. So like we talked about, these are like club shows in a sense for Golden Boy Promotions. They used to have them at different locations. I think the most common one that they had during the last decade or so was in downtown Los Angeles at a small
Avalon.
Well, they had them at the Avalon, but I don't think it was that long. The one I'm thinking about that they had for quite a while, that it was, they had a pretty good agreement with them, and they had them quite a few times a year. Was at the Belasco Theater in downtown Los Angeles. The Avalon is in Hollywood, California, and then downtown Los Angeles had the Belasco Theater, which had quite a few fights. I remember going to some of those fights on like a Friday or like a Thursday, and then they would have the fights start like at 6 or something like that, 5:30, and then they would end 8:30 or 9 or something. But they would have to quickly tear down the ring and all the equipment, because that place becomes like a nightclub later on at night. So I thought it was funny, because you would walk out of the fight and then there was a line outside of people who were going to go in because they were going to see a show, or it was a nightclub or something. It was pretty funny, but it was cool. It was right there in downtown Los Angeles, and you know, Jojo Diaz came up there, Ryan Garcia came up there, so a lot of the current generation of crop of fighters that they have came up right there at the Belasco Theater at their LA Fight Club. So that was an exciting time in Golden Boy Southern California footprint there. Moving on to fight previews, this upcoming Friday, the 15th of September, from the American Bank Center in Corpus Christi, Texas, South Texas. You know, Corpus Christi doesn't really get that many fights, at least that many fights in terms of big publicity like this on ESPN. This is a Top Rank card, right?
Yep, Top Rank.
Top Rank on ESPN. Luis Alberto Lopez, 28-2, goes up against former Golden Boy Promotions fighter Joette Gonzalez, 26-3. This is for the IBF Featherweight Championship of the World. What do you think about this matchup?
I think you have to go with Lopez, to be honest with you. I think he's just very unorthodox. I think he could make quite easy work of Joette. I think Joette's very basic, maybe is too strong a word. But I think he'll upset Joette with his rhythm. He's coming from very strange angles. You know, you think out of range, and then next thing you're not. You know, if you look at what Lopez has done over the last few fights, you know, he's been in there with, you know, Michael Conlan, Josh Warrington, Gabriel Flores not too long back, Andy Vences, Isaac Lowe. just getting stronger and stronger, you know, beating someone like, you know, Josh Warrington, and then also, you know, taking care with relative ease of Michael Conlan. I think he'll beat Joette Gonzalez pretty easily, to be honest with you.
I mean, Joey Gonzalez, ever since he's been at top rank, he's gotten some significant opportunities. You know, top rank has really delivered in putting him in matchups that, you know, world title matchups or you know, significant opponents. He just unfortunately has come up short in the big moments. But, you know, I'm sure like any fighter at this point in their career, I feel like Joette's going to have a lot of determination here. I don't know. He's a Southern California guy. Him and his brother Jouse Gonzalez, who's still under Golden Boy Promotions. I think Jouse is a little younger. He's a younger Gonzalez. But yeah, you're right. Luis Alberto Lopez is. I feel he's just the better overall fighter. But it's not that Joette Gonzalez isn't game. You know, you can put him in there and he can give you a tough fight. He can make you go to work. But I think I agree with you. I think Lopez takes this, but who knows? Maybe we can see a highly, highly motivated Gonzalez just because he knows, man, you know, if this is a world championship title belt too for the featherweight championship of the world, the IBF featherweight championship of the world. And, you know, maybe Gonzalez's team and Gonzalez himself know, like, you know, if I lose this fight, is top rank, are they done with me? Are they going to keep using me? Or, you know, I mean, look at how long top rank used, who was the, he was an Olympian.
Olympian?
Wasn't he Olympian? Like Puerto Rican or something? I feel like he fought everybody. He fought a lot of people on the PBC side and on the top rank side. Oh my gosh, why am I...
Not Gamboa.
No. Why am I blanking on his name?
Pedraza.
Yeah, Jose Pedraza. I'm not saying Gonzalez is going to be that, but, you know, him being at featherweight and then maybe super featherweight and then maybe lightweight eventually, you know, all those divisions have a lot of fighters.
It's funny when you look at his record, top rank must like him, or he has some pictures of Bob Arum in some sort of situation where he's able to get fights because he fought Shakur Stevenson, lost, then came back, fought Mariaga, won, then got another title shot. For Navarrete, lost. For Gio Santissima, beat him. Then he fought Isaac Dogbe, lost. Then he fought Enrique Vivas, won.
That Dogbe fight was a close fight, though.
And then he fought, and then he gets another title shot. So top rank must like him because he's not going away and having to rebuild a lot. He goes away, rebuilds one, maybe two fights, and then he gets thrown back in for a title shot every time. So,
right. I mean, yeah, you're right. They must like him, and it's just working out for him. And you know, he left Golden Boy and went to top rank, and I'm sure Golden Boy, I mean, who knows, based on how the split happened, but I don't think there was any issues, but who knows, we're not there internally, but it's possible Golden Boy Promotions staff or people over there called top rank and said, hey, you know, he wants to go over there because you guys have a lot of players and he wants title shots, and top rank was like, yeah, we need guys, and you know, Gonzalez is at that point. Like, I mean, look at his record, 26 wins, 3 losses. Like, that's still very, very extremely impressive. So you put him in there and you put him, oh yeah, he's beating Mariaga. He's been in there with Shakur Stevenson. He's been there with Navarrete, Dogbe. In terms of the marketing, you can use that. Gonzalez has that resume, even though he's been on losing ends of the bigger significant fights. You can use that in the marketing, especially on a big platform like ESPN and all that. But you're right. He loses a big one, then he wins one, and then he goes right back into like another title shot. So, I mean, I don't think that's not a bad deal that he has right now ever since going to top rank. I mean, obviously he wants to win a title, and he has another shot again this weekend. But so far, so good. But, I mean, is he maybe thinking like, if I lose again, is top rank going to, you know,
he's going to
drop me or?
He's got one more because he'll lose to Lopez. He'll come back. He'll fight someone random. He'll win that. And then the only one he hasn't fought is Robizy Ramirez.
Oh, wow.
And he's a top rank fighter. So then they'll stick him in with Robizy Ramirez.
I'm telling you, he could be like a Pedraza. They use Pedraza for everything. Yeah. They threw Pedraza in there to use Pedraza for his resume, his pedigree.
And then they'll say, hey, that's it now. Sorry, Joette. You faced all of our
Yeah, he's like, hey, we gave you a lot of paydays. We threw you in there to give some chances. I mean,
all world title
shot. I mean, I hope I'm rooting for the guy. I hope he, you know, he seems like him and his brother seem like nice guys. And I feel like if he wins this weekend and he wins the IBF Featherweight Championship of the World and his first world title win, I feel like it's going to mean a lot to him. Just like when Jojo Diaz won his title, I think, in Florida, you know, it obviously meant a lot to him. I feel like Joey Gonzalez would be the same thing. It'd mean a lot to him. But who knows? Either way, I think this is a pretty interesting matchup. I do agree that I think Lopez is a favorite, but it's a world title matchup at 126 pounds. You know, they both got extremely similar records, 28-2 against 26-3. And let's see who wins. So, and it's on free ESPN. So, you know, if you don't have anything to do this Saturday, or Friday, excuse me, Friday the 15th of September, go check it out. And if you're in the South Texas area, Corpus Christi to be exact, go see if there's tickets available at the American Bank Center and go check it out. See what's going on. In the co-main event, Jermaine Ortiz, 16-1-1, goes up against Antonio Maron, 29-5-1. What do you think about this matchup?
Interesting matchup. You know, Ortiz kind of hit the scene, didn't he, when he had that, you know, close fight with Lomachenko. Maron, and people might recognize his name. He's been in there with Anil Barboza Jr., Devin Haney back in 2019, and someone you were just talking about, Jose Pedraza, back in 2018.
Pedraza's fought everybody.
Right. He seems to get most of his wins on the smaller cards, and then obviously he kind of just steps up and then loses. Not normally manages to go the distance, though. Went the distance with Pedraza, went the distance with Barboza. Actually got knocked out by Devin Haney in the seventh round. I think Ortiz, for me, I think Ortiz is a pretty good, well-rounded fighter. You can see that he knows his way around the ring. You know, when you've done that many rounds of sparring with someone like Lomachenko, you've got to be pretty good, right? Or else he wouldn't invite you back. So I think Ortiz, and I think on points.
And his only loss, I think, is to Lomachenko, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's not... Would you really count that as a loss if you kind of try to look at it? Because, I mean, you lost to one of the best fighters of the last decade.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously he's got the big win over, you know, Jamal Herring as well.
Oh, yeah, he beat Jamal, yeah.
He retired Herring, right?
Yeah, technically he retired Herring. But as Herring said on our show, you know, he's hopefully coming back by the end of the year, so we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, I mean, Ortiz, yeah, I think he's got some momentum here. And like I mentioned, the only loss he has on his record is against Lomachenko. So, you know, that's not a bad person to have the only loss on your record in regards to these matchups right now. Also on the card, Xander Zayas, 16-0, goes up against Roberto Valenzuela Jr., 21-4. This is for the NABF and NABO super welterweight titles. Xander Zayas is still, what, maybe 20, 22 or early 20s or something like that? Is he? I don't even know if he's even 20 yet, but I think he's in his early 20s. He's got a lot of confidence behind him for Top Rank. I think they're expecting a lot of big things out of him. What do you think?
Out of Xander Zayas, yeah, big fan of his so far. I think he looks, you know, really, really good. Always seems to be keeps himself in the gym, seems to be professional, seems to be big for the weight. As long as he doesn't just get, you know, used to kind of bullying people and kind of like, you know, throwing them around because he's the bigger guy. If he just keeps with his boxing, I think he'll do really well. I think this is a good fight for him. If you remember Valenzuela, he fought Beck the Bully, Suleiman Sissoko, and then me and you were ringside when he fought Alexis Rocha back in 2019 when, I don't know, Lex kind of got into a bit of a brawl with him, and he was kind of knocking Lex about a little bit, and then Lex kind of managed to put his head on straight, and then managed to, I think he retired at the end of the fifth, Valenzuela, eventually. But he's a pretty big, strong guy. If you look at it, 21 wins with 20 knockouts, he's heavy-handed. He'll come forward, which I think could be the perfect style for Xander Zayas to look good, and I think probably Xander probably stops him.
Yeah, but you're right, though. I think how you described it, you know, he's got 21 wins, 20 knockouts. That's impressive. So this might, you know, who knows? Maybe we might see an upset. And obviously, Zayas is the favorite here, but Like you touched on the Rocha fight that Valenzuela had with him, with Rocha. That was a crazy fight up until Rocha got the win. But, you know, would you consider this for Zayas a level up in his progression so far?
Let me quickly look at his record.
Who, yeah. Valenzuela?
Yeah, and I was just looking at Zaya's record just to make sure. I would say so, because if you look at Valenzuela, you know, 25 fights, which is probably the third most of Zaya's opponents. But if you look at the people he's been in with, you know, the names that I said before, this kind of shows you the kind of caliber of people that he's been in with. And then also you've got to, you know, even if he is knocking out club-level fighters, he's still knocking them out. He's still got to have power, right? So, you know, he has to also be a little bit wary at the same time as well of what's coming back at him. So I think it should be a good fight for Zayas just to see where he is. He's still super young. He's 21 years old. So he's, you know, he's got 10, 15 years left of his career. So you can take your time with Zayas and just kind of let him fill out and really become a man, you know, before he gets right in there with some of the bigger names.
Yeah, I think they have a lot of high hopes for him. You know, him being so young as well too. If he can keep winning and really maybe build some type of a audience following for him, some crowd backing, especially, that's huge because he's so young. And if he ends up staying with Top Rank for the long term, which I'm sure he's signed for quite a while. Then, you know, that's the next star for them that they can lean on, you know, because that's what everybody looks for, right? All these promoters, big or small, they look for some type of marketing push behind a fighter that could keep winning and is good and can put butts in seats and, you know, create publicity for them, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, he's got the Puerto Rican fan base. So, you know, Florida and obviously the New York area are the two places that you normally see the Puerto Ricans fight. So, yeah, I think so far I don't think he's really put a foot wrong. You never hear anything negative about him, you know, outside of the ring. He looks like he's dedicated and he's doing pretty much everything that we want of him in the ring, isn't he, so far? So, yeah, good luck to him.
Do we know who trains him?
I think he's trained by, is it Rosario?
Oh, is it? Oh, okay.
I think so.
Got it. Yeah, because I forgot the Ortiz or
down in Florida.
Oh, he trains in Florida. Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Puerto Rican, you know, short flight from Florida to Puerto Rico. That absolutely makes sense. Also, this upcoming weekend, this Saturday, the 16th of September, from the Commerce Casino in Commerce, California, here in the Los Angeles County area, on DAZN. William Zepeda, 28-0, goes up against Mercito Hesta, 34-3-3. I like this matchup. These guys are obviously Golden Boy fighters here. This is a Golden Boy card on DAZN here in Southern California. Zepeda obviously has a lot of momentum behind him. He beat Jojo Diaz, I believe. He's pretty much high. He's high in the rankings for a lot of these lightweight rankings right now across the board. And Mercito Hesta has been in there. I feel like he's like a young veteran in a way, where he's been in there with like Jorge Linares, and then he fought didn't he also fight Jojo Diaz, and he beat Jojo Diaz. Mm-hmm. So Zepeda beat Jojo, Mercito beat Jojo, so they got that in common. You put them against each other. I like this fight. I feel like obviously Zepeda's got the momentum behind him right now, and Golden Boy, I think, it has a lot of high hopes for Zepeda to see how far he can go, and hopefully they can get something out of him and maybe another world title at 135 that he can hold or something like that. And then Hesta, I feel like Hesta's always pretty game in his fights. What do you think about the matchup?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think Zepeda, for me, is the favorite in my eyes. I've never been the biggest fan of Hesta. I think he's decent-ish fighter, but I don't think he's, you know, going to be winning any world titles or anything like that. Whereas Zepeda, I think, you know, the opposite. You know, I think he's definitely going to be up there as a challenger. Just the constant pressure, the work rate, the power that he has is hard for anyone, because you just can't get a rest. And I think Zepeda stops Hester, to be honest with you. When? I think it'll be a game fight. I think round seven, round eight. I think
he'll. You think he actually stops him though? Because I don't think Hester's really known for being stopped, is he?
Just one time stopped by some random Juan Antonio Rodriguez back in 2019. Linares didn't stop him, and neither did Miguel Vasquez. They both went 12 round unanimous decision losses. But yeah, he's 35 now, smaller opponent. I think Zepeda stops him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I just feel like Hester, like I said, do I want to call him a young veteran? Because he's 35. I thought he was...
He looks it. That baby face. He looks
yeah, young. Yeah. That's probably why I said that. But, you know, he's been in a lot of significant fights in terms of his career. And, you know, he's never been a world champion, but he's 34-3-3. I mean, he's been almost 40 fights and all that. But Zepeda just has all the momentum right now. But Hester, you know, he fought Jojo. And Jojo's what? 5 years, maybe 4 years younger, 5 years younger than Hester, and Hester beat him. So I don't know. I feel like he's one of those guys too. We talked about Xander Zayas, but here in Southern California, Mercito Hester, I think he lives here in Southern California, and he trains, I think, or he did train at one point at the Wild Card Gym for a while. I think he's from the San Diego area, if I'm not mistaken. You know, I've only heard good things about the guy over the years from people in the boxing industry. You know, and he's dedicated, he fights and stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, is this the moment where we see that Hester, you know, does he show his age at 35 and Zepeda, you know, just kind of runs over him? Or, you know, let me ask you this in terms of Zepeda and Ryan Garcia, since they're both under the Golden Boy banner, if you had to pick one, who gets a world title first? Ryan Garcia or Willem Zepeda? Obviously, we know who's getting the money, but I'm talking about a world championship title. What do you think?
Ryan will get the shot first.
Oh, yeah. I'm not... Yeah, I agree with that, but like...
Who gets the... Maybe Zepeda, just because... Isn't Haney moving up and the belts will become vacant?
I think that's the best course of action at 135. Haney moves up, drops all of them, and they all kind of go in different directions, right? You know?
Yeah, and I think that'll be for Zepeda, that'll give him a chance because he's been on a winning streak for a while. So I'm sure he's going to be highly ranked in one, if not two or three governing bodies so far. And I know I said it last time we spoke about Hester, but just to kind of put it into perspective, Hester's pro debut was in 2003. So he's been a professional fighter for 20 years.
Wow. So he
October 19th, 2003, he won a four-round decision against Erwin Picadel.
How old was he?
He's 35. He turned pro at 15.
I think he was like 16, maybe?
Yeah, it's like 15 or 16.
Was that a United States debut?
No, can't even pronounce it. Somewhere in the Philippines.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, Pacquiao, Canelo, they all started young. So, I mean, yeah, it worked out for him. I mean, that's why I said he's one of those grizzled veterans, I guess. I'm not a young veteran. I take the young part back, but, you know, he's been boxing a long time, just like the Canelo blueprint in a sense, or the Pacquiao blueprint and all that, you know. They've been boxing since they were kids, Mayweather, all that stuff. So
he's been a pro boxer longer than he was a child.
That's insane, huh? That's insane. But I mean, I feel like he's, you know, I mean, obviously he hasn't been in like high profile fights and all that, but I mean, he was on HBO against Linares and all that. And, you know, he's sponsored by Adidas too, Adidas Boxing or something. So that's a pretty good deal. You know, hopefully he got some money out of that. But I feel like he's probably had a pretty decent career in terms of maybe decent paydays. You know, he obviously hasn't had a Ryan Garcia payday or any of those, but like, I feel like he's been pretty consistent where he's got some pretty decent paydays out of all these almost 40 fights he's had, right?
I'm guessing he must have done because he had like 3 years out of the ring and Golden Boy didn't release him or anything like that. So I'm assuming that he must draw good numbers in the Philippines or he must do good tickets with the Filipino fan base over in California or something like that. Because if you're not hot, at the end of the day, it's a business, right? They're not here just to do you guys favors. So right. he must do something for Golden Boy.
And I mean, LA, Southern California in general has a big Filipino population. And at least here in Southern California, with all the casinos that we have, a lot of Filipinos like to go gambling. They like to go to casinos. And this fight's taking place at a casino in the Los Angeles area. You know, maybe there it is. Maybe they're trying to tap in. I'm sure that's what it is, but it also helps. Like, Zapata is Mexican, Hesta is Filipino. There's big populations, respective populations of each side in the Southern California, LA area. And that's the main event on DAZN. So I like this fight. I'm excited for it. I'm going to catch it and see what happens. Because I think Hesta, you know, he always shows up to be game. And Zapata's just got, you know, all the momentum behind him. So we'll see how this goes. In the co-main event, Victor Morales, 18-0-1, goes up against Edwin Palomares, 18-4-2. This is for the WBA Intercontinental Featherweight Championship of the World. And also Yocasta Valle, 28-2, goes up against Maria Michelle Santizo, 11-3. This is for the IBF and WBO minimum weight titles of the world. Obviously, what do they call her? Yoka Valle. Her and Sanisa Estrada, who is now with Top Rank, who used to be with Golden Boy, they've been chattering back and forth about fighting each other, talking smack, and that they're going to fight each other and all that. Do you think we see that fight next year? I think we do because, you know, the female division in general, especially at that weight class, you know, there's not a lot of big money fights or a lot of competition. So I think we see it within what, maybe the first 5 months of next year. Do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think both of them and, you know, Estrada is always older than I think, you know, every time she looks super young, when you look at her age, she's actually a little bit older. And same as Valle. So I think both of them probably need it, right? Like you said, it's, women's division isn't stacked full of names. So you really need to get in there against, you know, the other big contenders, because that's also where the big paydays are going to come. So I think, yeah, we need to see it once, if not twice next year, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously if it's a decently competitive matchup in that first fight, they can pull out a rematch out of it. I mean, like you said, like we talked about numerous times over the years, you know, the female division isn't as stacked, nearly as stacked as the male division. So, you know, like look at Clarissa Shields and Savannah Marshall. You know, Savannah Marshall just signed that MMA deal with the Professional Fighters League to do MMA fights. So they obviously want to do an MMA fight between both of them. I mean, you know, they got to take advantage of any type of marketing and any type of paydays they can get, even if they have to keep rematching the same person, you know? So, I don't know. I think, depending on how she looks this weekend, you know, I just think that Sanisa Estrada is on a different level than a lot of other fighters in and around her weight class. What do you think?
In terms of scales, she just lacks some pop. So that's the thing that, if she manages to come up against somebody that hits hard, I think that'll be where she might come unstuck. But, you know, in women's boxing in general, right, you don't really get many knockouts. So I think, you know, a lot of the time she just manages to win just on pure skill. You know, she has a very attractive style, a very fan-friendly style. She kind of, like, you know, showboats a little bit, which is makes her one of the better females to watch.
Yeah, yeah. So we will see. That's this Saturday, the 16th of September, from the Commerce Casino in Commerce, California, which is in the LA, Los Angeles County area. If you can't make it to the fight, it's going to be on DAZN. News and notes section of this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Shakur Stevenson, a fight we talked about last week. We were so excited for it because it was close. There was reports that it was close and all this. We got to stop having this hope when we see all these reports and all that. We should have just known that it wasn't going to come to fruition, especially when it's two different promoters involved. Depending on the promoters, but you know, we should have known what the writing on the wall was. This was for when we saw it. But Shakur Stevenson is once again seeking an opponent, at least as of right now, for his lightweight title shot at 135 pounds. Stevenson was slated to fight undefeated contender Frank Martin, who was under the PBC and Al Haymon banner, after the sides had reportedly agreed to a deal earlier this month. But the fight is now off, according to Top Rank and ESPN. Top Rank said that they, along with the PBC side, notified the WBC on last Tuesday that a deal was reached for the WBC vacant lightweight title fight, which is Haney's, supposedly he might have vacated, because there was a scheduled purse bid for this Martin-Stevenson fight, and then it was canceled when both PBC and Top Rank told the WBC that there was a deal reached. So that was very, very encouraging news. And then supposedly in reports, Top Rank had sent the contract over to PBC not long after that news broke, but was later told that Frank Martin was no longer interested in proceeding with the fight, which, you know, keep letting us down, boxing. Keep letting us down. I mean, we will see. But reportedly, Frank Martin was set to earn probably his biggest payday to date, which I would assume so against somebody like Stevenson. But PBC, Top Rank, we should have known. We should have known. You know, even seeing the, like, it's how people say when, you know, they talk about these fighters, like, oh, Pacquiao, Mayweather, when are they going to fight? Or Canelo and Triple G around that time? Or Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder and all that? You know, all these over the years that you want to see these fights and these fighters go up against each other, especially when they've been on opposite sides of the promotional spectrum. You know, what's that saying that some people say, like, oh, I'll believe it when they're both in the ring, you know, when they're both in the ring on the day of the fight, that's when I'll believe that it's really happening. Cause I mean, it's true. You see that it's signed and delivered. I mean, look at Spence. Look at Spence was supposed to fight Pacquiao a couple years back. And then, I think did he have a car accident or what happened in that fight?
Yeah. He got injured. And then that when Ugas stepped in.
I think it was something like that. And, you know, obviously they did a press conference too. And, you know, obviously didn't work out. But, you know, obviously that was a little bit different with an injury. But I think we should just start saying that. We'll believe it when they're both actually in the ring on fight day. That's when it's actually real. Because if not, you know, it could be canceled or no deal reached up until right before the ring walk starts. You mean, you never know. You never know. I mean, obviously we're stretching it a little bit, but it's kind of how the game works, right? In the fight game, at least in boxing, with all these different promotional entities and broadcast agreements, that's the nature of the game. So, you know, I'm assuming, and I think there was a video out there of that I saw of Frank Martin. I don't know how long ago it was, but he was talking about that something in regards to Shakur Stevenson and also saying that, I think he was talking about Haney. No, he was talking about Devin Haney or something like that. And Frank Martin was pretty much saying, yeah, you need to go and be the underdog. You know, sometimes you got to be the underdog to show what you got. And you need to beat the big dog and then you become the guy. Like there's a video of Frank Martin saying that. And, you know, I mean, I guess he didn't mean it. Do you think, obviously we're speculating here, do you think that Frank Martin pulled out on his own? Like it was him and his team maybe thinking, hey, you know what? Stevenson's really good. Maybe we should wait on this and not take this fight right now. Or do you think it was more like a PBC Al Haymon, like TV thing where they're like, hey, we'll make sure you get we'll match the same payday you get for this in your next fight. And then we'll put you on Showtime or something like that. Do you think this was more of an Al Haymon PBC thing telling him that? Or do you think it was more Frank Martin saying, hey, I don't think I should face Stevenson yet. This guy's too good.
Al Haymon. I think it's the PBC wanting to keep it in-house. You know, I'll give him a pass if it comes out in the next few weeks that his next fight is going to be Gervonta Davis. And
I don't want to say a rumor, but I mean, we've seen some information about that. Do you think that's true?
Let's hope so, right? You know, if he's going
to... I mean, like, because you also got to think about it. If both PBC and Top Rank told the WBC, hey, we reached a deal, cancel the purse bid. Okay, that, you know, maybe at that point, yeah, they had a deal. And I think you're right. I think the only way, if Martin's not the one that he's going to back out of, like, if he's not the one that's backing out of this and thinking, oh, you know, Steven's too good, you would think that maybe Heyman and PBC told Frank Martin, like, hey, if you don't take this fight, we've already talked to Tank Davis. We'll put you in there. Or, you know, does Tank Davis's name, is he the only one that can get, assuming Frank Martin isn't the one who's ducking here, or, you know, maybe it's a transactional business decision or something. Is Tank Davis's name the only one that can hold that weight for Frank Martin to decline this fight against Stevenson?
Yeah, I think he's the only one that could command a payday similar, or a chance, a belt or something like that, you know, similar.
What about Isaac Cruz?
Isaac Cruz would be a good fight, but I don't think he's as big a name, and I don't know if the payday would be as good. And, you know, we've seen it before, right? You know, with the PBC pulling people out of fights and stuff like that. Look at the time when, you know, Luis Ortiz got to fight AJ and was offered like a huge purse, and supposedly Al Heyman told him, like, hey, turn down the fight. We'll make sure that you get like a similar payday in the future. And they ended up sticking him in there twice with Deontay Wilder to try to make up the money that he would have made against Anthony Joshua. And I'm sure it's a similar situation now. Like, they don't want their fighter to lose on another card. They would rather keep him inside and face against other PBC fighters.
It's just like all these promoters and broadcasters. I mean, we see it. It happens all the time. I think you're right. I think if Martin doesn't come out in the next fight and fight the only one over there who could, you know, who people could understand, like, oh, okay, I get it, is Tank Davis. That's the only one. You can't come back and fight, you know, I don't know who else they got over there. I'm just missing people. But if it's not Tank Davis, I think it's people are definitely going to keep piling on him in terms of criticizing him for backing out of the Stevenson fight. But if it is Tank Davis, like you said, you got to give him credit. He's just like, oh, okay, you know, like, you're declining a fight against Shakur Stevenson, but you're going against another guy who's probably, you know, it's Stevenson and Tank Davis right now at 1A, 1B, 1 and 2, or 2 and 1, or whatever, however you want to categorize them. I mean, I think Tank Davis, like you said, is the only one that should remove the criticism, right? And say, look, I'm not going to fight this guy, but I'm going to go fight this guy who's arguably more dangerous or just as dangerous as this guy, right?
Yeah, 100%. You know, this. I would like either fight Frank Martin, Shakur, or against Davis. You know, you just hope that if they're turning it down, they're giving him a similar payday, a similar chance at something, because you only get one career, you know, and you don't want to be sidestepping and then end up with nothing, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I'm interested to see how this turns out. But like you said, that was a good analogy in terms of Luis Ortiz. He had the AJ offer. And, you know, maybe like Ortiz, I'm sure he looked at it like, oh, I'm older. Reportedly, I don't know, it's been a conspiracy theory for quite a few years. Ortiz was like, oh, you know, I can fight AJ and get a really big payday, and maybe that's good retirement fund to end my career on. And Al Heyman and PBC told him, like, hey, we'll put you in there with Wilder twice, you know, like, well, and they did. They put him in there twice, and he got good paydays for those fights. And, you know, like, if Martin has as much control of his career, you know, that we might think, depending on his contract, you know, maybe he told Al Heyman and PBC, hey, look, I want the Stevenson fight, you know, because I don't think the PBC, along with Top Rank, wouldn't have told the WBC to cancel the purse bid. if PBC hadn't talked to Frank Martin and said, you want this fight? And he's like, yeah, give it to me. You know, maybe the PBC said, hey, we talked to Davis and he's in. So do you still want this fight? Like, and he said, oh no, I'll take the Davis fight. It's a bigger payday. Like that, I'm assuming that's it, right? Because if that's not it, there's no other reasonable, at least in-house within the PBC stable, there's no other reasonable opponent that he could have on why he would sidestep Stevenson and go fight somewhere else. There's just not. There really isn't. So, yeah, I'm really interested to see how this unfolds, because they've been saying that they want Tank Davis to come out again before the end of the year. So, and we're getting there. It's September already, so there's a couple months left, 3 months left in 2023. And then also Devin Haney will enjoy a Bay Area homecoming. He's from the Bay Area. Devin Haney's originally from, is it Cleveland? Or am I wrong in saying that? Where's he from?
No, he's from San Francisco. I thought he was from Vegas.
That's what I was thinking. He's lived in Vegas, but I guess he's a Bay Area kid. I'm surprised about that. I thought he was from East Coast or something.
Yeah, he moved to Vegas when he was a teenager, because when they announced the fight, I was like, that's a random place to put that fight. So I Googled Devin Haney, and then he lived in San Francisco till he was a teen and then moved to Vegas.
Oh, that's interesting. So he's going to have a scheduled Bay Area homecoming as he tries to become a two-division champion. So this is, as of right now, it's a report. He's moving up to 140 pounds to challenge his WBC junior welterweight champion, Regis Prograe, on December 9th at San Francisco's Chase Center, the home of the Golden State Warriors for the National Basketball Association League. I don't think there's been a fight there yet at the Chase Center in San Francisco. And that arena holds probably 15 to 20,000 people if you completely fill it up. So that's it's like a Staples Center or a crypto arena, whatever you want to call it.
They're not filling that.
It's a fairly huge arena. It's a significant arena. And San Francisco doesn't get any fights, and they're getting the undisputed champion from the weight below moving up to 140 to fight one of the guys who's been really dangerous, who's a world champion at 140 pounds. I mean, if this comes to fruition, obviously, like we just talked about Martin and Shakur Stevenson, we thought we were close for that and that went away. So far, this is just a report as of this recording, but hopefully this comes to fruition, because you got to give it to Haney for becoming undisputed at 135 and then moving up to 140 and fighting arguably the most dangerous guy at that weight class for the WBC 140 championship. And then I'm also very interested to see how the crowd turns out, how the tickets sell for this arena, because I think this is the first fight at this arena since it's been built. It's a brand new arena. I think it was built within the last maybe 6-7 years. So I'm very interested to see. If you had to guess, what do you think? How do you think the crowd is on that day?
Full? No, I think it does poorly. I don't think it does well poorly at all. Remember when Regis Prograe signed with Matchroom and they gave him the homecoming fight in, was it New Orleans or Houston? That didn't even sell out. And then obviously Devin Haney's been based in Las Vegas for a considerable amount of time. He doesn't really sell out Las Vegas. And then you're moving them both to San Francisco, which you don't really have any connection with. Okay, Devin Haney was born there, but he doesn't really ever represent there. He doesn't train there. He doesn't live there. They're kind of taking it to just a random city. And I don't really think San Francisco is a huge hotbed for boxing. So I think it does very poor, unless they just do tickets for like $20.
Do you think San Francisco was a...
they paid a fee.
It was on a list?
Fee. They probably paid a site fee to Matchroom to get fight there.
Maybe. I mean, because you're right, because if you look at it from a social and political perspective, at least over here in the United States, the city of San Francisco and San Francisco as a whole has been gaining a lot of bad publicity for how the city's been run, with a lot of issues going on there. And the the politicians and the elected officials and, you know, government agencies there have been trying to do a campaign to try to revitalize the city and, you know, having press conferences and stuff. So, I mean, you're right. It's possible that maybe they paid a site fee. Maybe they paid a site fee to DAZN or whoever, Eddie Hearn and Matchroom, to try to get that fight there. I mean, who knows? Because, like, Haney and Prager aren't really – they're not household names, obviously, but – I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe they're just like, oh, let's just pay a site fee to this. You know, they, maybe that's true. Maybe Matchroom put out some feelers and they saw it and they said, oh, yeah, we need. I don't know. You think so? You think they paid a site fee?
If you're saying it's a new stadium, I'm sure they want to try to recuperate some of the money that they've laid out for it. So they may have said to Matchroom, like, hey, you can have it for free, or we'll even pay you a small fee to come here. Just to fill it up, you know, because it's a very random place. I thought I'd read it wrong when it got announced. I was like, San Francisco. I was like, that's a random place to hold that fight. So I can't see why it's there, because even if you look at the Matchroom stable, it's not like they have like a co-main or a prospect which is going to bring in a load of people from that area. I think the closest fighter they have that could maybe put butts on seats there is someone like Mark Castro. And even then, he's a prospect.
Even then, that's not really... No. You know. No, you're right. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he'll be on this card, you know, be him also being from the Northern California area. I could totally absolutely see that. I'd be surprised if he's not. But I don't know. Maybe it's also like, this is kind of like a neutral territory, even though Haney's from the Bay Area. Obviously, like we talked about, he hasn't really had a following in certain areas of the country, even if he's from the Bay Area or from Vegas or all that. And maybe Prager was like, oh, yeah, I'll do San Francisco, you know, but he probably said, I don't want to do Vegas because Haney's been in Vegas for a while. And, you know, I don't want to do Louisiana. Like Haney said, I don't want to do Louisiana because Prager's from over there. And so maybe they all decided on San Francisco. You know, I was like, oh, that's kind of a neutral site, you know, and I'm sure they looked at LA. I feel like in LA, the fight would have probably done pretty good just because of the fight scene down here. But maybe you're right. Like you said, like we talked about, this San Francisco Chase Center is a newer arena. I don't even think it's success. It's fairly new. It's fairly new. And maybe Matchroom and Eddie Hearn, they approached the arena and they talked to them. They're like, oh yeah, we want fights here. We haven't had one yet. You guys would be the first ones. You're right. Maybe they got a pretty good deal on the site. I mean, you would assume so, right? Makes sense.
Yeah, because I can't imagine it's Matchroom where, like, you know what? Like, this fight needs to be in San Francisco. And they went out and booked it. Because to me, with Matchroom, you would have thought it would have been in Las Vegas or Texas, two places they've already done fights before. Especially right. With if you're a fighter, I think I would rather fight in Texas or Vegas because you're going to take home more of your money.
Right, right. Yeah. So we'll see. I mean, if they don't, you know, if they're not, if they're getting a pretty good deal on the arena site, the site fee, or there's no site fee or something, I don't know, maybe Haney and Prograe are in on that cut too. Who knows? Who knows? I mean, you're right, too, because California obviously is expensive and there's taxes, there's state taxes and stuff. That's why a lot of these boxing fights get done in Vegas, Texas, and all that, because they have no state income tax. So you get to take home a little bit more money. I don't know. And maybe Haney and Prograde told Eddie Hearn, like, hey, if you want to put us in California, you're going to have to pay us a little bit more because they're going to take out more taxes. So I don't know. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it. I mean, Haney's undisputed. It seems like he's carrying some weight. So I don't know. Either way, if this comes to fruition, I'm looking forward to the fight. I'm looking forward to the fight. I'm giving Haney a lot of credit. And I'm very interested to see how the fan base turns out right there in the San Francisco area. I'm very interested to see that. And also, for the first time since 2007, two female fighters could be in the ring for a title fight just as long as their male counterparts. When undisputed featherweight champion Amanda Serrano defends her WBA, IBF, and WBO world titles against Danila Ramos on October 27th at the Caribe Royale Resort in Orlando, Florida. The two will fight 12 3-minute rounds instead of the official 10 2-minute rounds for title fights in women's boxing. So this will be the first women's unified championship fight ever fought under the same rules as men. So this is a very, very historic, if you look at it that way. Amanda Serrano will defend her titles against Ramos, the WBO mandatory challenger, in a fight approved by all three sanctioning bodies and the Florida Athletic Commission, and put on by the most valuable promotions of Jake Paul. You know, this is historic. And I saw a recent interview, or I don't know how recent it was, but the WBC president, Mauricio Sulaimán, was once again asked about 3-minute rounds for women. And, you know, he said he wasn't for it. He was open to seeing, you know, other medical information. But he said he wasn't interested to see it. And I think that's why the WBC title isn't on the line here, because Amanda Serrano is undisputed. But as you heard me say earlier, this is for the WBA, IBF, and WBO titles, because the WBC said, well, no, we don't approve of this going 3-minute, 12 rounds, you know. So they took they're not sanctioning this fight. So the WBC title is not on the line. I think that's kind of interesting, you know, but who knows, man. Like I said, I'm not really too familiar on I've never dove into the medical information or the medical studies in regards to this. The WBC says they've had medical studies conducted. They've spoken to physicians and scientists and all that, and the information they've gotten has said that it's not safe for women. You know, going 3-minute rounds, extending the life of a fight like that for females, as compared to how men do it. And there's been other studies, I guess. I mean, you gotta think about it. It's just like any science studies. I mean, there's always one study or another, right? You know, have you seen that recent documentary, not documentary, but it's like a recent show on, I don't know if it's HBO or Netflix or something. It's called Painkiller. By the way, we're not sponsored by this. I'm just mentioning it. It's about OxyContin in the 90s or 80s or something. And how reportedly it happened behind the scenes, how they got approval by the U.S. government and all that. They were saying that it could be used as a pain reliever, and it was safer than this, and it was safer than that. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? There might be, I don't know, there might be some crazy stuff going on behind the scenes. Maybe even, I don't know. There's always different opinions, even from the medical field, for everything. So who knows? Who knows? But do you think? Let me ask you this: do you think the WBC would ever come around, or is everybody else just going to drop it? Who wins? Who gets to the finish line first? In more of a, I don't want to say permanent fashion, but in more of a long-term fashion.
Women's boxing.
What do you mean?
I think that though they will get the 12 3-minute rounds eventually, and the WBC will follow suit.
Because they're losing.
WBC sanction everything. The WBC would probably sanction me with a belt to open my fridge. You know,
I'm going to ask that the next time I see them. I'm going to ask to see if they'll do that.
Yeah, because he wants his 3% of everything. So it's okay for women to fight the same rounds in bare knuckle, and obviously MMA. MMA is absolutely huge, and the amount of money that they put into, you know, the science behind things, weight cutting, all that sort of stuff. I think if anybody was going to do some sort of study to find out whether women should do, you know, rounds of less minutes, it would be the UFC, you know, and they're kicking each other in the head, choking each other out. So yeah, it's probably just an old study that was taken years and years ago. Let's see a newer study that shows some sort of facts, and then I don't know.
You sound so disappointed, Mike. You sound so disappointed.
Well, it's just WBC for you, isn't it? You know, they just, you're a sanction buddy. No, just sanction fights and be quiet. You know, like giving Conor Benn an excuse for like his you know, we think it was that you ate too many eggs. You're like, well, why are you even getting involved? Like, you didn't take the test. You're a sanctioning body. Just keep your mouth shut.
That's true. Yeah, but this is something that we definitely need to study. Like I said, I've never looked at the studies and all that. I've just, you know, read some news reports and all that and what the WBC says. So this is something that we should dive into and kind of read up on and maybe have a discussion in the future. And then also in some unfortunate news, the boxing world has lost another longtime fixture in the boxing world as trainer Mike Stafford is said to have passed away at the age of 67. Stafford had been a boxing coach since the 1990s and was well known on the amateur circuit for his work with Team USA, having twice won U.S. National Coach of the Year. In the professional ranks, Mike Stafford was perhaps the best known as the lead trainer for Adrian Broner, but also worked with other fighters such as, wow, man, I can never say his first name.
Rashi Warren,
Robert Easter Jr. But even as Stafford's profile grew, he stayed true to his roots as he continued to mentor young amateur fighters. There's been no mention as to the cause of death for Stafford. So we know he did pass away now, right? Like, we've got some news on that. So we don't know the cause of death, but, you know, the boxing community has lost another fixture. And we appreciate the contributions that Mike Stafford gave to the sport of boxing. And obviously, everybody here at the Last Round sends our condolences to Mike Stafford's friends and his family. And then Tyson Fury, according to Boxing Scene, or Boxing Scene wrote this, but said that he has no interest in fighting contenders and strictly fighting for the biggest money possible. Is this really surprising? I mean, like, I feel when fighters get to this level, that's what happens, right? You know, Tank Davis is doing it. Tyson Fury is doing it now. You know, the one person that kind of, even when Mayweather fought De La Hoya and became Money Mayweather and stuff, Mayweather did still fight significant people, you know, but he was just such a big star that he made money anyways, but he still fought in dangerous fights. But, you know, we have these fights now where these fighters now, I mean, is this really necessary of a story to write to say, oh yeah, he said he's not interested in finding contenders? I mean, what can we say on that? What is your reaction?
If anybody that's watched the Tyson Fury documentary, you can just see how from day to day, minute to minute, hour to hour, how he is completely different. And you can just see, obviously, the problems, you know, that he has. You know, one time he's like, says he's going to retire, and then the next time he's like, I'm going to fight into my 40s, and, you know, I haven't really got anything else but boxing. He changes his opinion and his mood, like, you know, like the weather. So it's really, you can't really take anything that he says, you know, seriously because of that, and because of, you know, he likes to joke around, he likes to stir the pot also as well. So yeah, you know, why they wrote a story about it, I'm guessing it must have been a slow news day. Like you said, it's, I think all of us just have to get to the point where, you know, we believe a fight's going to happen when they've made the ring walk and the referee's announcing them, because that's just how fickle boxing is.
That's true. That is true. So once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. We apologize for we haven't had a guest in a couple weeks. Our schedules are kind of trying to line up as best as we can. So we've been trying to find scheduled times and dates for some guests. It's just been a little bit more difficult the last month or so. So we're going to hopefully try to get some guest spots in the next couple weeks and try to give you quite a few guest bonus episodes and all that here on the Last Round. But before we completely sign off, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
We are at The Last Round 12 on Instagram and Twitter. Be sure to join us next week. We'll be previewing the Zili Zhang Joe Joyce rematch and Richardson Hitchens against Jose Zepeda.
So for once again, for my co-host Michael Shepherd, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.